At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Post Perez. My name is W.H. Park. Tonight, I'm also known as El Agotado. For those of you who speak Spanish, you'll probably be saying, why are you the exhausted? Well, because that's how I feel. But, you know, I think I will be getting my second, third win because I'm talking to, of course, as always, my good friend, the Empress of Post Wrestling, Karen Peterson. How are you, Karen?
I am, as you can see, I am refreshed. I am just back from my vacation. I've watched very minimal wrestling for the last 2.5. I think pretty much since the G1 finished and we recorded, I hung up that call. I was pretty much like, I'm not doing anything for the rest until I get back. Mm. But I'm back. I've watched some wrestling. I've gone to Canada. I've met Kate from Montreal.
Well, there you go.
French. It was lovely. And I bought more yarn and I'm doing socks. I'm in my cozy girl crafting era right now.
Did you buy French Canadian yarn?
I did. We bought yarn in 4 different places.
Oh, awesome.
In Nova Scotia, on Prince Edward Island, and in Montreal.
So you got Anne of Green Gables yarn.
Yes, I do. One of the colorways I have is called Green Gables.
See, I knew it.
I also have one called Puffin because they migrated right before we got their little bastards. But
you know, like one of the strange things about Japan is like how popular Anne of Green Gables is. Like I went
also like something like was it the Carpenters? There was a lot of Carpenters being played when I was in high school.
Really? I don't know about the Carpenters, but I remember once people find out like I'm Canadian, they go, oh, do you like Anne of Green Gables? And I'm like, why the fuck is everyone asking me about fucking Anne of Green Gables?
It's
I'm like, sure, it's fine. I used to watch the cartoon when I was younger. Sure. It's fine. I've never read the books. I never read the books written by one L.M. Montgomery, but, you know, I don't disapprove of the books. But people would ask me, oh, like Anne. I'm like, Anne who? Anne of Green Gables from Prince Edward Island. Have you ever been to Prince Edward Island? Have you ever been to Prince Edward Island? No, but I want to go because the cartoon, the one I'm referencing from the late 70s I got to watch it in the 80s. Like, this was so popular over Japan. It's really interesting.
It's one of those things because it's a very well-known international children's book. So I think because of that, when it makes its way to Japan, it's like kids here learning about Totoro. So it's like, oh, you're going to Japan? Have you seen Totoro? Yes. I frolicked in a forest. We took a nap in the sunshine. It was great.
Now they're just going to ask you, do you know like fucking Pikachu now? Oh, it's all about Pokemon.
I've been to Super Mario World yet. I'm like, bro, I haven't. I want to go, but
I've been to Disneyland. Does that count? I've been to Disneyland.
I haven't been there yet.
Disney Sea.
It's fantastic.
Ghibli Land. That was fun. I've been to the
Ghibli Museum. Is that the same thing?
It's basically the same thing. Yeah,
they have like a theme park now. But I also haven't. Yeah. I haven't been to Hello Kitty Land.
Sanrio Land.
Sanrio Puroland. I haven't been there.
I would like to go, actually. Even though I'm in my 50s. I would like to fucking go.
Bring me back something.
So, but yes, but you met, you did meet Kate from Montreal in IRL, real life.
Yes, I met Kate from Montreal in Montreal. We had brunch. It was lovely.
That's nice. Kate, what's she like? Kate, what's she like in real life?
She's exactly as she is on the post. She is lovely, very soft-spoken, very passionate, fantastic person to talk with.
Awesome.
25 out of 10, I'd highly recommend it to a friend or neighbor, especially one that I liked.
What, meeting Kate from Montreal?
Yes.
Well, maybe I'll have the pleasure one day. I don't know next time I'm going to Montreal, but maybe one day Kate from Montreal will deign to come visit us here in Toronto. Maybe be blessed to hear Davey Portman. Happy birthday to you, Davey. Belated birthday to Davey Portman from Poison Rana. He serenaded us with the Alfred quote about a certain type of wine in the backyard of John Pollock last month.
Oh, at the secret backyard VIP
TV. That's right. The VVIP gathering of post people. Some not VVIPs, but I won't say who it was because they're probably listening to this show. But they'll now be like, oh, fuck, he's talking about me. No, I'm just joking. I'm just joking, Jack. Wow, shit. Sorry. No, he's a nice guy. He's a nice guy. Jack Wanon is, I got to meet Jack. I think it was the second time I met Jack Wanon. He's a very nice guy. I met him at the fucking Poison Rana All In from Wembley viewing party a couple of Sundays ago, which is awesome at Wide Open. Had an awesome time. Davey and Braden know how to put on a fucking party, let me tell you. Always a pleasure to go one of the things that they organize and host. But yeah. So you met Kate from Montreal, who is, of course, co-host of Collision Course, which reviews AEW Collision. So we're going to review Capital Collision. So maybe this is a post-collision, post-pro Collision Course. And I'm Park No Evil, and this is the
Karen from Orlando.
Empress from Orlando. That's a new ways like, oh, I can clip that and put on the social media. John Cena's like, fuck, that's my gimmick, WWE, don't fucking steal it. John, just chill the fuck out. You can keep your fucking See No Evil nickname, all right? So anyways, we're going to talk about Capital Collision. We have thoughts about that show. We're also going to run down some recent happenings, results, kind of talk about some upcoming tournaments and things that of that nature. But yeah, we're going to try to run through this and keep it nice and tight on this show. And so not to meander too much. So I won't bring up, has your mom been watching my content recently? I'm sure she has. She's a big fan of mine.
Right? Mom's a big fan of Post Pro Wrestling.
That's right. Mrs. Where's my camera? There you go. Mrs. Peterson.
Oh yeah. I taught her about the Korean love hearts.
Oh, there you go. There you go. All right, so September 2024 edition of Post Perez. We're going to review. Karen and I both watched Capital Collision 2024 emanating from, let me get my notes here, emanating from Washington, D.C., which is where it always takes place, from the venue? The Entertainment and Sports Arena.
Yep.
From Washington, D.C. They say, Karen, they list attendance. I don't know if this is a work or not. 2,266 people. That didn't look like it. When you could even see the fucking crowd on this show, on this broadcast, I thought, what is it, like 500 people? Because also, they didn't sound like there was 2,000 people in here.
No.
You know what I mean? Like,
Sometimes it felt like it wasn't 2,266. It was 2.66 people. The venue is very, very dark. And that's been a consistent problem with New Japan Strong shows, is that some of these venues, they're lit like they were recording back in LA during the pandemic. They're very, very, very dark. You can't see the audience. There's very, what's it, frugal production value. Mm-hmm. And it makes it kind of difficult to watch. I found myself being very distracted by it. Not because it was like there wasn't flashing lights every 5 seconds or anything like that, but it was just, I was not very invested in this card.
I don't think anyone was. I don't even, that includes the wrestlers.
Well, it's frustrating because there were some potentially really good matchups on this card, and I don't feel like very many of them panned out for me. Mm. And I don't know if it's just because I'm still recovering from the G1 or I'm still have vacation brain, but I just, this show didn't vibe with me today.
So this is the third installment of Capital Collision, and you've watched all three installments.
Yeah.
How would you say this compares to like the previous two?
It just felt like, and I hate to put it this way, it felt more like a New Japan Strong TV taping as opposed to one of the very few big US shows that we have every year. It has Tanahashi on it, yes. It has Naito on it and Hiromu, but it just felt like it was just lacking chutzpah. It had no oomph, no volume to it. It was just like, it just felt like a Road 2 show, some throwaway in between everything else that's going on.
I mean, my overall thought when I started watching the show, and I think by probably the fourth match, maybe probably by the time I'm getting to, I suppose, the Tom Lawler, Fred Rosser versus West Coast Wrecking Crew, my thought was there's some good wrestling on this show, but like, I don't understand why this show exists. Also, like watching it by this point, I'm just like, this venue, the way it's lit, the way it's mic'd, it sounds terrible. Like, and it looks terrible. And I just thought to myself, New Japan looks really low rent doing this. Like they just come across as being desperate to try to break into the US market. But this didn't come across like if you're watching New Japan in Japan, if you're watching it emanating from, you know, Sumo Hall, even Korakuen Hall, which is about the same amount of people that, you know, maybe a little bit less than what they list as the attendance for this show.
Yeah.
But it sounds way better.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like Edion Arena in Osaka, Osaka Joe Hall, Fukuoka, Hiroshima. Those places make New Japan look like a big deal when they run in Japan. But when they run the US, I feel they remind me of like a latter years Ring of Honor show, which is not a compliment.
The other hard thing is for me is that it feels like they're trying to do touring again, which is great. But the problem is that I've seen Ring of Honor, like near end of Ring of Honor prior to AEW acquisition Ring of Honor. I've seen it in small venues in Florida, and it had better lighting. It had better production value. Like every show, even if it was just like a midway taping for something else, it felt like a big deal. Like, the last time when I went to Toronto like years ago for a Ring of Honor show that had New Japan talent on it, it also felt like a big deal. But this, it just doesn't feel like a big deal anymore. It just feels like I hate to say it, but it feels like they're doing the bare minimum and trying to rely on the name notoriety of New Japan instead of actually, you know, packing up the whole crew, shipping everybody over on a plane and making it feel like a big deal when they first tried to establish 5 years ago. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know if it's because they don't have that TV deal with anymore, and they lost that foothold, but it just feels, I feel like I'm at an NXT house show and not a good one. And that's not a good feeling to have.
I think also like, you have, you know, and New Japan has bastardized the novelty or the specialness of bringing in over people like Tanahashi and Naito to the United States. Everyone sees them. And when you have like AEW constantly featuring every year New Japan talent in a better presentation on Forbidden Door, and then, you know, on Dynamite, a Collision, whatever, like you don't have to watch fucking New Japan to watch Tomohiro Ishii. He's on fucking he's on fucking AW television all the fucking time. He's basically
he's the quarterly residence in AEW at this point. Like
it's not special to watch Tomohiro Ishii in America. It's not. It's kind of sad, honestly. And who do they send over? They send all the guys, outside of Naito, who's the world champion.
Zach was on the show. His match with Titan was probably my favorite.
This show didn't. Where's all the younger guys? That in featured matches. Where's Tsuji? Where's
they're running a they were gearing up for their Road to Destruction series that's starting this week. So I feel like they were just giving everybody a break, especially after Uemura got hurt and he's going to be out for 6 months now. So.
I would imagine one of the appealing parts for Zack Sabre Jr. to come do this show, probably to wrestle Titan in a singles match.
Yeah.
But probably also I'm going to get to hang out with Mikey and Shane in America, along with, Robbie Eagles, who's doing a tour of the Americas, from what I understand, is part of his travels recently.
Yep. He's on a little mini excursion right now. And, with Bad Dude Tito, the one of the American part components of TMDK that doesn't get to go to Japan nearly as much as everybody else.
No. So that being said, let's kind of run through some of the matches. I did not watch anything on the pre-show. I didn't feel like I needed to. Did you watch anything on the pre-show?
I watched the pre-show, so you didn't have to.
Thanks.
The Strong Survivor series is still a thing. It's a great showcase opportunity for a New Japan Academy talent. I hope that if the end game for it is that someone gets sent over to the Noge Dojo and gets experience in Japan, great. I'm just not excited about it, I guess. I wish that they would, for that, I wish they would start sending the Young Lions over and let the Young Lions participate in that slot instead. Because that was one of the things that I liked about going to New Japan shows previously, was that the Young Lions, because they would send everybody over, you'd have the Young Lions there and you get to more familiar with them if you're not familiar with them, from chronically watching New Japan like some of us do. The Empress Nexus Venus match with Hanako and Mina Shirakawa tagging against Viva Van and Trishadora. This is also kind of like a pseudo New Japan Academy showcase, because Trish and Viva Van both have worked with New Japan Academy, and Hanako has been in the States for a couple of months and did a showcase with New Japan Academy. It was fine. Unfortunately, it was nothing to write home about. I kind of felt bad for Hanako, because Mina Shirakawa comes out and does her big dancey entrance that everyone's been seeing since she's been on AEW, and she's gone over to Rev Pro and won two titles in one go. But then, she does her little dance, and then Hanako walks out with Mina's belts and just hands them to her, looking kind of sad and kind of like, all right, it's just, I don't know why they went through all of that, because it kind of made Hanako not, they didn't raise her up at all, so that was kind of frustrating to watch. But mercifully, both of these matches were under 7 minutes apiece. But if that was what you were watching to consider buying in and buying the pay-per-view, it probably would not sell it for you.
No, I don't see why.
And as a Shirakawa fan, that's a hard pill to swallow, but it was not a very good match.
Well, let's start off Capital Collision. Tomohiro Ishii, Hiroshi Tanahashi versus the grizzled young veterans of James Drake and Zach Gibson. Taking on the TMDK duo of Bad Dude Tito and Robbie Eagles. This is for the number one contendership for the Strong Openweight Tag Team Championships, which are currently held by Empress favorites Mikey Nichols and Shane Haste. This is okay. I thought Robbie looked great, as usual, working with the heavyweights, especially in this match. And GYV worked really well. It's kind of interesting to see their kind of more American WWE, because there's still a lot of traces of NXT in their tech work, even though, like, yeah, they established a lot of this back in the Brit Red Sea.
They need to shake off the NXT that's lingering on them, because they when I used to be pre-post days, I used to be really into the Brit wrestling. I really enjoyed watching them wrestle. I'm glad that they may have finally found a place that they can get a foothold to start, you know, doing more outside of WWE. But I just hope this isn't the last time that we see them, because I feel like as a tag team, they could be something that would make World Tag League feel fresh.
Hmm. Well, hopefully their gateway in there. You know, they're going to probably do a lot more. I don't know if they've signed with AEW. They appeared at All In and Wembley. Yeah. But I don't know. I don't know if they've signed fully. But and then we had Ishii and Tanahashi, and this made me sad, Karen. I hate to say it, because I love Hiroshi Tanahashi.
I know. You're preaching to the choir, my dear.
He needs to retire. He looked fucking terrible in this match. He's not working. He can't work out, I think. Compared to what he looked even like 3 years ago, he looks terrible. It's sad. I just felt sadness watching whenever he got in the ring. Ishii's just Ishii now. Like, you know, he does his greatest hits and it's okay, but you know, Tanahashi just comes in there and I'm just like, dude, please, you're the president. Just please retire. Don't end up like Keiji Muto. Like, you know, and just regardless, you're not in the G1 anymore, whatever. You're still like, you know, and they win. They're the number one contenders for the tag titles. I don't want to see that fucking match because I know it's going to be terrible.
Yeah, it's as much as I would love to say that I want to see Tanahashi wrestle one more time before he retires, like see him live in person to wrestle. I would much rather see him healthy and walking around and, you know, doing the president thing. I'd rather have him have his health than kind of being bummed out watching his matches, because I've been one who screamed her head off many times watching a Tanahashi match, and I can't do that anymore. I just wanted to like hold him by his beautiful hair and be like, it's okay, you don't have to do this anymore.
I don't think his name now draws a single dime to any of these shows, so I don't see what the point would be. Here's the thing. I've seen Hiroshi Tanahashi at his peak live. I've seen him win the G1. I've seen him win the world title from Kenny. I saw that. That's like, I don't know how much better it gets than that. This is okay for what it was, for when like Robbie's in there. Bad Jutito acquitted himself fairly well. But, and it's like TMDK versus GYV. Fun little tag match. When Tanahashi's in there, I'm just like, he's going through the motions. His tights look like they're going to fall off at any fucking moment. And that's sad. That's really sad. Yeah. But anyways, not that this next match is going to make me feel any better. Rocky Romero, Yoshihashi, and Kevin Knight take on the Bullet Club War Dogs of David Finlay, Clark Connors, and Drilla Maloney. I know it's to build like Finlay versus Yoshihashi in Japan, but at the same time, did it really do that? I don't think so. I just think everyone here going through the motions, all of them, you know.
All it really did was set up junior tag match for Kevin Knight and probably Kushida against, again, the Connors and Maloney.
Who cares?
I didn't feel any way about Finlay versus Yoshihashi, even though, you know, the chaos demon in me is like, Yoshihashi, after 15 years, he's bringing it home finally.
No, he's not.
I know he's not.
You know why, like, he's not? Because he's not accompanied to the ring by fucking Ghetto, the booker of this fucking company. All right. It was boring. I don't know. Again, I was like, why does this show exist? Why does this match exist? Next, something a bit better because it was different and it was actually pretty violent and I enjoyed that. The team of Tom Lawler friend of the show, and Fred Rosser taking on Royce Isaacs and Jarrell Nelson, who a while ago, I think it's been a while now, that they turned on Tom.
Yeah. This is probably New Japan Strong's longest running storyline is Rosser versus formerly Team Filthy. But yeah.
And like they really play, like I watched with English commentary. So we have Walker Stewart and Veda Scott, who did fine job trying to fill in all the storylines for someone like me. You know, they talked about, you know, Tom Lawler and Fred Rosser have being rivals for the longest time until West Coast Wrecking Crew just turned on Tom and now they're united. And I enjoyed this match. I didn't at 11 minutes and 38 seconds, I thought it didn't overstay its welcome. It was different from everything else before it. And it was violent. I loved it. I loved that it was different. I didn't love the match, but I thought it was very enjoyable compared to what I had witnessed the previous two matches.
I think it, for me, is that, you know, I get a little like tired that there's always a plunder match on a New Japan Strong show, but usually involves Moxley and previously Ospreay. But it's, I think, because of the long-standing rivalry and feud that this story has been telling for all four of these guys, I was fine with it. I thought using doors instead of tables was a creative choice. But they break a bit easier than tables do, apparently, so that was fun. But yeah, it didn't overstay its welcome, thankfully. And I feel they fought their way into the arenas instead of fighting their way mid-match around the arena.
I've been told that doors are cheaper and easier to find than tables, and so all you have to do is kind of scour like abandoned lots or something.
Junkyards and stuff, yeah.
And you can find some doors that you need to use for like in lieu of a table, which costs money. You have to buy them new for the most part, and then you can destroy them. So they're free.
There's no metal in them, so they just and they're not like, you're not pulling out oak doors, you're pulling out particle board doors, so they just break away real nice and clean.
So that was won by Lawler and Rosser. It's fine. Good little sub 12-minute match. Nice to kind of cleanse the palate. And then we followed by probably my favorite match of this show, and that is the reigning G1 Climax winner and the soon to be world champion come October, and that is Zack Sabre Jr. taking on Los Ingobernables' De Japón's El Immortal Titan. I like Titan.
I do like Titan.
He's fucking fun to watch. I like this guy. He should get a lot more shine than he does by this company.
Yes.
But you know what? He got a singles match with Zach, future world champion. And he
held his own during the match, too.
It's great. Yeah, he's busted out the Llave, which is like the Lucha Libre version of, like, I don't know, the Lancashire style, as some commentators will call it, the British, you know, the heavy Billy Robinson
technical
wrestling,
chain wrestling.
But he also mixed in a lot of his high flying. I love the contrast. You could tell like Zack Sabre Jr. really enjoyed having this match. He was all for it because like, oh, I get to wrestle someone probably I watch on tour. I don't really have any opportunity to wrestle this guy in a singles match. Probably. Yep. I would imagine they have encountered each other numerous times in multi-man tag matches, but you know, singles is different. So, and they got 15 minutes almost and they just went out there and had a blast. And I love this match. I, if there's anything you want to watch, I think you can almost outside of one other match, you could probably skip everything else on this show except I would urge you, if you want to watch really good wrestling between people from different types of wrestling cultures, Zack Sabre Jr. versus Titan. And Zack won in 14 minutes 53 seconds in an excellent match. One of my highlights though was like the fan who's obviously a huge Zack Sabre Jr. fan.
Yeah.
Before the match we got a glimpse of her. A young woman who's wearing, actually, I think she's wearing old school Zack Sabre's Junior's t-shirt before he was even in New Japan. And then he came over, he grabbed her towel, he wiped his sweat off of it and gave it back to her. And she looked happy.
We love a good towel wipe, not gonna lie.
So she's probably never gonna wash that thing. But hey, you do you.
I mean, as somebody who is in possession of a Tanahashi sweat towel, I understand.
You do you, Empress. You do you. All right. Next up. Oh my God, I hated this fucking match. Tetsuya Naito versus TJP. Why, Karen? Why? Why is he wrestling this guy? I could be talking about either one of them, right?
If we were talking about prime Tetsuya Naito against TJP, it could have been a fantastic match. I feel like TJ did a lot of the heavy lifting in this match to kind of carry Naito to what seems to be a sub 5 out of 10 rating on Cage Match. I wanted so badly to like this match, and I just didn't.
It's almost the same length as the one before it, but it felt like 3 times longer.
Correct. I did like the flash pin attempt series near the very end. That was fine, but I know that usually the matches that have Naito tend to be longer on, especially on the American shows, because we don't get him over here that often. But it had no stakes. It was just a special singles match where we could have easily had this match had TJ been allowed to participate in the G1. I just don't.
Also, what is he wearing? What is TJP wearing? He's wearing these.
He is in his Aswang phase, which I believe is a type of, I don't want to get it wrong, I believe it's from Filipino folklore. It's a type of monster.
Okay, can I just describe, if you don't know what fucking TJP is wearing right now, he's wearing these, first of all, he's wearing a fucking t-shirt sometimes.
He put on Naito's t-shirt, that was kind of funny.
Yeah, but then we had to see Naito without a t-shirt, which is not fun to watch.
Well, then he put it back on, so.
Yeah, and it took him fucking forever to put his t-shirt back on after he got it back from TJP. But okay, he wears these long leather-like tights, pleather, whatever. And then he's wearing these, like, I don't know how to describe them, like, they're tassels. But they're made of like buckled like straps. And I'm just like, is this an S&M character?
No.
What are you doing? And what the fuck? Like this, first of all, it looks impractical. It probably is. It doesn't look like it would be much fun for your opponent, especially when you're like getting the face wash from him in the corner.
Yeah. And
these things are slapping you in the fucking face. And they look fucking stupid. They really do. Like TJP, I don't know if you listen. You probably if you did, probably not after this. Dude, just go back to your like some of your old shit, because you looked way better in the Cruiserweight Classic, okay? This current look, it's the pits, just like this fucking match. If you can avoid anything on this match, it's the fucking match between Naito and fucking TJP, because oh my God, I nearly tapped out. I nearly like thought I was in a Zack Sabre Jr. fucking submission, Karen. I almost fucking tapped out. This whole show. Nothing to say. I mean, I've said it all.
It just bums me out. Like, I really want to be positive about the show and New Japan in general, but right now I feel like they've lost the plot. They focus on certain people here and there, but by and large, I feel like the way that this card is put together, they don't really have plans for anyone, or they're trying to make it fit into the In Japan canon by just like kind of like throwing these multi-man matches like onto this US card as opposed to making it a standalone on its own show like they did in the past. It just makes me sad.
I mean, the premise of most live event companies, including pro wrestling companies, should be to try to draw people and make money.
But I'm not finding any of the stories compelling. I mean, Zach versus Titan didn't need a story, but it was a compelling match.
Next, strong open weight tag team championship match. TMDK, Mikey Nichols, Shane Hayes took on the CMLL tag team of Hechicero, who I fucking love. I love this guy. He's so cool. He's such a great wrestler. For a big dude, he moves so well. And taking on and teaming, Hechicero teaming with CML legend Virus. I would try to say Virus, but you should try maybe properly. He's it's pronounced Virus in Spanish, even though I'm not Spanish. I don't know. Am I being appropriating language pronunciation? I don't know.
You are trying your best, and that's what's important.
But you know, it was fun. You know, I think for TMDK, it was really fun for them to wrestle guys they would probably never wrestle.
Correct.
In any other context, excited like strong for their for their tag titles here. And yeah, it was 14 minutes and it was fun. Didn't need to be anything more than that. And you know, TMDK won, and then they were confronted by the number one contenders, Tanahashi and Ishii, and Tanahashi had to try to cut a promo in English, and that's never a good thing, you know, for most talents who don't speak English pretty fluently to do a pro wrestling promo in America in broken English. And you know, they play up the whole, I'm the president. What I say goes. It's like, I hate that kind of thing when it's like an evil authority figure. I think it's even worse with a goofy babyface. And I hate saying that about Tanahashi, but he's a goofy babyface authority figure, and that's even worse.
I never thought we'd be saying that in 2024, that Tanahashi is a goofy babyface.
Listen to that promo. I was like cringing the entire time, and I hate
He tried his best. I will give him his gold star for trying his best.
Okay. And two gentlemen who tried their best, but I just was not into the next match at all. Hiromu Takahashi taking on Mustafa Ali.
Yeah.
The stipulation was, had Hiromu lost this match, he would have probably had to say that Mustafa Ali is the best junior heavyweight wrestler in the world, which is okay. Who came up with that idea? Whose genius idea was that? Because it's terrible. But there's nothing wrong with this match, Karen, for me, except I just didn't care about it.
I wanted to like this match. On paper, this should have been the knock your socks off, you must watch this match. But I felt like, I don't know if it was, you know, the mood lighting or, you know, the lack of stakes, because Ali had recently lost his X Division championship. So there was like nothing at stake other than we're going to find out who's the best junior heavyweight. But it just, I hate to say it, I felt nothing. And for someone who loves Super Juniors and loves watching Hiromu and Ali both wrestle, I wanted to love this match so much, but it just.
Hiromu shouldn't be a junior anymore.
No.
He does not look like a junior anymore.
I feel like once Hiromu, he's going to beat Hanari for that never open weight. And he needs to stay open weight after that. Like, the juniors don't need him anymore. They need to figure out who they are without him and start making plans.
He's just running the risk of like devaluing and making himself irrelevant if he stays in the same spot he's in, which is like, let's be honest, in 2024 in New Japan, being the top junior in the company doesn't mean nothing. It doesn't mean anything. You're not a draw. You're probably still selling, you know, fucking Daryls, but who cares? Like,
he's selling a lot of Daryls.
You know,
they need to start selling that really jacked Gerald Jr. that they've got with the little lucha mask.
Don't they sell it already?
No, they do not sell that version. That is a custom edition Takahashi household only.
I see. Seemingly. I'm sure someone If you're a real big fucking Daryl fan and you really want it, I'm sure there's someone on Esty that can fucking help you out. Okay.
I'd like to commission a very buff Daryl, please.
There you go. You can find fucking anything on Esty. I need a fucking lightsaber that's also a cigarette lighter. You can probably fucking find that. I don't, you know. Not that I would want that because I quit smoking, but you know.
Well, that's good.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
But next, for the strong openweight championship, it's a challenger, Blackheart Lio Rush, taking on the defending champion Gabe Kidd, doing his best impersonation of Dr. Death Steve Williams with his robe and his boots, and that's about it. But hey, I like Gabe. I think, you know, there's a lot. He's really coming into his own, but I think there's so much more potential in this guy. Yeah. If he just tweaks his character a bit, loses kind of like the obnoxiousness a bit, and just becomes a tough guy. Just tough. Not a loudmouth, but just, oh fuck, he's going to come and fuck you up kind of a guy. Not just like, I'm going to fuck you up. And then, you know, kind of fucks him up, but not really fuck him up.
He needs to dial down the volume and channel his inner Ishii and he'll be fine.
Yes, that's a great analysis. That's why we had the Empress on this seat.
I try my best
because she's fucking smart about this wrestling shit. it was okay. I thought it was fine.
Yeah,
a little long at almost 18 minutes. Yes. Because at no point did I think Lio Rush was going to beat Gabe Kidd.
No.
because like he's not a New Japan guy and Gabe Kidd is a project. Mm-hmm. And there's no fucking way he's losing this belt to Lio Rush. Nope. Who I don't even know if he's fucking signed. I think he's just a freelancer. Lio Rush.
I don't think he's signed.
Right. He's not.
I don't think he is.
Gabe, not fucking losing to fucking freelancer guy that just does spot shows for and works for fucking MLW and whoever else like on as well. No, it's not happening. So, I mean, I do think Lio Rush really put in a good performance.
Yeah.
But no, at no point did I think, hey, you know what? He had a fun entrance. I like the entrance. That was fun. But yeah, Gabe dominated the most of the match. He gave him a lot, which is great. But you know, Gabe won with his like, what would you call that? The single crab. That kind of package pile driver that he does. I like that.
It looked like he was kind of like trying to do like a fisherman's buster, but he kind of like flips the person up. I don't know.
It's like a pile driver, but he hooks a leg.
With a leg lock in there somewhere. How?
Like a single leg Boston crab, but like into a pile driver. You have to see it. It's a good move. I think it looks good.
I don't ever want to have it happen to me.
Finally, our main event and my second favorite match on this show, which, you know, not really a high bar to clear considering what we've just been talking about. Momo Watanabe from Hate and Stardom challenging defending champion Mercedes Moné for the Strong Women's Championship. And of course, she's also bringing out her AEW TBS Championship because she's very proud of that belt, I think. Maybe a little bit more proud than being the Strong Women's Champion, but
she likes being a double champion.
I thought also the best built match for this show because mainly from like the promo package that they aired, also from like the little, you know, promos and packages that Momo shot for this. I don't think really too much from Mercedes, but I think they just thought, oh, it's Mercedes. That'll sell. And I think probably most of the tickets sold for this were based around her star power.
Possibly, yeah.
For that, I don't think that much was sold for like hardcore or not hardcore, like casual New Japan fans. I don't think anyone's traveling for this show. I think it's probably all within driving distance.
I know a couple of people that did fly in for it.
What were they thinking, Karen? Please tell them. WH Park wants to know what you're thinking.
They just love the New Japan.
Blindly loving something is just as detrimental as openly hating something, in my opinion. But
their favorites are on the show. They made the journey.
There you go. As long as they had fun the show.
Yeah.
Then that's good too.
My only beef about this match was that Momo was in the middle of the five-star Grand Prix when this was happening. There were other wrestlers who were not picked for Stardom's five-star Grand Prix that could have easily filled this slot. I'm fairly certain Mercedes wanted to wrestle Momo specifically, which is why she got the match. But at the same time, Stardom shouldn't be sacrificing the integrity of their tournament, because Momo's always been one that hasn't won. She's never won the five-star. She's never won the World of Stardom Championship. So she's always been a contender in the conversation for always going to the finals. Or would this be the year that she finally wins the big one, even though she's a heel? But like midway through the tournament, they announce this match, and it's like all of a sudden you're like, well, she's not going to be able to fly back for the finals, so she's out. Mm-hmm. So it just kind of spoiled the tournament a bit for a lot of people.
Yeah, it's really poor planning.
Like, and if Stardom is now that Stardom is under the responsibility of New Japan, they need to, if they're going to coordinate their own brand with in the US or internationally, plus their engagements in Japan, they need someone to coordinate all those schedules so there's not all this overlap.
Yeah.
Because you're just going to end up upsetting the fans that are the ones who are loyal to Stardom primarily.
Totally agree. I think you're right. I probably Mercedes said, "Oh shit, I like Momo. She's a great wrestler. I want to wrestle her." She probably put the request in, and they said, "Yeah, sure." And probably once Momo heard, because she probably knew she was going to win the five star.
Yeah, I know.
Then they told her, "You're going to wrestle Mercedes in the main event of the show in America." She's probably like, "Oh, fuck yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Sounds great to me, because I'm not winning the five star. I'm not going to become the champion. So why not have this like featured match against one of the biggest women's stars in the last 10 years? Fuck yeah. And probably, I think a lot of Joshi fans, Joshi wrestlers are like, shit, if I get a chance to wrestle like Mercedes, I think any of the four horsewomen, you know, like whether
it's
Charlotte or, you know, Bailey.
Yeah, I'm not saying that. It's just that if that was, I'm sure it wasn't a very last minute decision. So they could have put someone in Momo's slot in the five star to begin with and not had Momo in the Grand Prix altogether. Mm. The problem is that for me, besides Shuri, Momo is one of my favorite strikers in the company. She is exceptionally underrated. Yes, I hate the fact that she does the House of Torture heel shtick as a member of Hate, but she's one of their best all-around wrestlers in the entire company. And she's exceptionally underutilized. So if this is one of the ways they're going to start using her, great. Just don't let it conflict with what booking is happening inside Stardom at the time. Because she's half of the tag team champions right now.
With Tekla. Yeah.
Me some Tekla.
Well, I mean, we'll see how things pan out in future bookings and shows. But I really enjoyed this match. I thought Mercedes and Momo really complimented each other really well. Mm-hmm. You can tell they both enjoyed wrestling one another, and they didn't hold back. Is like when Mercedes does Joshi, I really enjoy watching her do Joshi, with her flair of American style wrestling in there. But yeah, go out of your way to watch this and Zach versus Titan, and you don't have to watch anything else on this show. In fact, I would probably actively avoid most of the things that we talked about today.
Yeah, sadly.
But that's it for the review of Capital Collision. Let's talk about some New Japan news coming up later this week. As of this recording, in a couple of days, Shingo Takagi will have his 20th anniversary show in Kofo City at the Aimese in Yamanashi, his hometown.
Yes.
That's right. Yamanashi is his hometown. So far, well, as far as I know, only two matches have been announced, but Karen, because she is the great empress of post-wrestling, she informed me in the Japanese site, which I did not go to, they've announced the full card. Why don't you just read the full card to us, Karen?
Okay. I don't know the. Hold on. It opens with a dark match for Young Lions, and I don't know how to read their names. Just
they're Young Lions. No one cares.
All right. So the opening match is Masatoru Yasuda versus Daiki Nagai in a 10-minute one fall match. Then there is Shoma Kato and Riita. It has three eyes in it. Yes. I don't know.
From Dragon Gate.
Versus Francesco Akira and your favorite, Callum Newman.
Prince of Pasty Skin, yes.
Then it's Katsuya Murashima and Ryusuke Taguchi versus Hanare and Jeff Cobb. Shota Umino and Jado versus Ren Narita and Sho.
Oh, Jesus.
But wait, there's more. Tomoaki Hanma and Tomohiro Ishii versus Jake Lee and Gabe Kidd. Taka Michinoku and Doki versus Taiji Ishimori and Ghetto. This is a very long card, and it's on my birthday. I'm not waking up at 4 a.m. to watch it, but it's happening. Then we have an 8-man tag, Tiger Mask, Oleg Bolton, Yano Toru, and Hiroshi Tanahashi versus Evil, John Pollock's favorite wrestler, Yujiro Takahashi, Dick Togo, and Yoshinobu Kanemaru. We're almost there. We've got Zack Sabre Jr. and Kosei Fujita versus the great Okan. And who's this guy? Who's this new guy? I don't know who you are. Hold on. It's a foreign guy. He's like the latest member of Jacob Austin Young. He's the latest member of the United Empire.
No idea who that is. No fucking clue.
A new face for the United Empire. And then in your main event, the only thing we really just care about is Takagi, Bushi, and Yamato versus Naito, Tsuji, and Hiromu.
So for those of you who don't know, Yamato is a Dragon Gate guy. Yamato has been linked with Shingo many, many years. When Yamato became, got out of kind of the young boy system in Dragon Gate, he joined a faction called New Hazard, one of my favorite factions in the history of New Dragon Gate, of when I was watching Dragon Gate. Shingo, BB Hulk, Yamato, and some couple other guys, and great unit. But yeah, it's great. It's great that, Shingo's going to be able to team with Yamato for this special match. That's on, that should be on New Japan World. On September 7th, this coming Saturday, as of this recording, at 5 o'clock Japanese time. So time yourselves accordingly. If I watch it, I'll probably just watch the main event and I'll watch it on tape delay. So anything else? We got Destruction? Any news about Destruction itself, Karen?
Besides self-destruction, give me one second.
Two matches, right? Just the two title matches.
Sorry, let me check. See, unfortunately, like the NewJapan1972.com has vanished, so I'm having to scour the Japanese site, and it takes me a little bit longer. So give me a second. All right, Destruction is.
It's like they don't give a shit about their English content, Karen.
All right, so Destruction and Kobe, they have not announced a full match card yet, but that is on the 28th, Saturday the 28th.
That's my birthday. Woo-hoo!
Oh, wait, no, that is not the 28th. That is the press conference. Just kidding. It is the 29th. And there is a match card. Hold on.
That's the day after my birthday. Woo!
But they have only announced the two matches you care most about, the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship defense of Tetsuya Naito against the Great Okan and potential match of the year setup. Not really. David Finley defending his IWGP Global Heavyweight Championship against Yoshihashi. That is all they have published on the website. Wow. I am not in mood for Twitter, so if you're that curious if they post anything else, go to New Japan Global on Twitter and find it yourself.
Well, I look forward to the review by you and Bruce Lord about this show, because I'm not going to review it. Not fucking my birthday weekend. There's no fucking way. Okay. I think that's it for New Japan. Let's move on to a product I actually still care about, Stardom. Karen, what's been happening in Stardom? There's some big news.
Well, you know, there was a little tournament called the 5-Star Grand Prix on the 31st of August. And probably the two biggest things coming out of that was that, one, Tam Nakano has regained the World of Stardom Championship, defeating Natsuko Tora, who did not participate in the Grand Prix. There is a lot of questions as to why, because Tam didn't really have the most monster run within this five-star. She had a couple of losses. But then Micah, who ran the table, went, including defeating Mayu Iwatani in the semifinals to advance to the finals against Saya Kamatani. She defeated Kamatani and then just turned around and decided to challenge Tam for next weekend at Stardom's Namba Grand Fight 2024 in Namba, Osaka on the 14th.
Have you ever been to Namba?
I have spent many a eventful day and possibly evening in the Namba, yes.
Yeah, Namba has the Donterbury River and all the places that come with the Donterbury. Very fun place. Also very close to probably a place I like a little bit more, Shinsaibashi, which is the kind of the district next to Namba. But a little crowded now these days. I probably don't want to spend too much time in either Shinsaibashi or Namba. These days I go to Osaka.
In my anime fangirl days, I did a lot of shopping in Namba.
Oh, did you? You went to Electric Town.
Yep.
Nipponbashi.
Yeah, there's a lot of like doujinshi shops and like resale shops. And then the third thing, which was kind of weird to announce after the 5-star, was that Mayu Iwatani has formally announced that she is retiring, dramatic pause, from participation in future 5-star Grand Prix tournaments. So she, like, her focus is going to be staunchly on the IWGP Women's Championship moving forward, which means that she may or may not be leaving, but she's also planning on being champion at least for another year, according to the interviews that the notes that I've seen. I don't know. Contracts are up March 31st. We'll see if she signs again.
There you go. There you go.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, it's your chance to travel back to November 2004 as Wei Ting and I review WWE Raw, featuring Trish Stratus and Lita headlining the show. Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson are going to be covering New Japan's Destruction in Kobe event, and MCU Later tackles Agatha All Along. All of that, plus Rewind to SmackDown and Collision Course weekly, and ad-free versions of Rewind to Raw and Dynamite. $6 a month unlocks it all at postwrestlingcafe.com.
So, let's move on to a company that's also kind of Stardom adjacent, but not, because it's Rossi's new company, of course. Of course, we're talking about Marigold. They recently announced the participants for their big tournament, the Dreamstar Grand Prix. It's consisting of two blocks, Star League and Dream League. How about I run down Star League and you can take down the Dream League?
Okay.
In Star League, we have Sarai, Miku Ano, Bozilla. I just like saying it that way, Karen. Bozilla.
You have to say it with intimidation.
That's right.
She's a kaiju. She's a big monster.
She's a good wrestler. I enjoy her work.
Yeah.
Nanai Takahashi, Mai Sakurai, Misa Matsui, Chiaki, and Kizuna Tanaka. That's the Star League. Who's in the Dream League?
In the Dream League, of course, we have Utami Hayashi Shista, Mirai, Koki Amore, Natsumi Shozuki, Chika Goto, Nagisa Nozaki, Victoria Yuzuki, and Nori from LLPWX.
Nori, like seaweed?
No. Well, I mean, it's probably short for Noriko, but she has like some weirdo, which is probably
Icelandic.
Yeah, I don't know if she has any roots to the Scandinavian countries, but it looks very much like a Scandinavian O.
I think she likes roasted dried seaweed, nori. I'm a big fan of that stuff. We call it kim in Korean.
I too am a fan of the dried seaweeds.
Yeah, it's good with rice, you know. I think Korean, kim seaweed is better than Japanese.
A spicy take.
No, it's not, because I have experience. Because like every time I went to the fucking supermarket, if I had a choice between Japanese dried seaweed and Korean dried seaweed, I'd go for the Korean, because it just fucking is prepared better. Japanese dried seaweed, unless you're getting it in like a fucking maki roll, is kind of boring, because they don't really like put oil flavor it with oil and salt. Whereas Korean style is like you put a little bit like kind of you kind of season it with like sesame oil and salt, you know, and then it's packaged that way, and it's like it's fucking great. Just makes rice it makes it so much better. Give me what I want.
This is not the passionate soapbox I was expecting on this evening's edition of Post Pro Res.
Yeah, you should have heard me talk about Jay White on MCU later this week.
But that would mean I can't be a freeloader, and I'd have to sign up for the Post Wrestling Cafe.
Listen, so I think you can talk I'm sure Wade could hook you up with a copy of it. You know, like if you want to hear us talk about fucking New Mutants.
I am enjoying the concept of MCU hater, because it seems very on brand for some reason.
Well, back to just Marigold here, Karen. Like, okay, so for the Dreamstar Grand Prix, this is their inaugural one. It's going to be a big deal. What are your thoughts about like who do you think is going to emerge from each league, and who do you predict to be the winner?
Okay, so people who don't really need it but are always going to be in the conversation as getting probably to the semifinals, if not the finals. Suri, who is currently the Marigold World's Champion. Utami, you know, the girl who did it all when she was in Stardom. Mirai could easily be in that conversation. But I would keep an eye out for Miku Aono, Misa Matsui, and Natsumi Shozuki. Those are the ones that I would definitely keep an eye on. I don't know if they're going to be bold enough to go with someone as young as a Kizuna Tanaka or Victoria Yuzuki on their very first one. But it all depends on how ambitious Rossi is feeling to see which one he can make into a new star.
I personally feel like it's the inaugural one that you need to establish it, the tournament winner, with an established star. I'm going to say, I think it'll be Utami.
It should be
the finals against Bozilla, so that she gets the big rub, and they have a killer match, and Utami wins. And since she challenges, I assume a title match is part of the package of winning the Grand Prix. And then she challenges Sarai for that world title. And because Julia's gone, she's the most natural candidate to become the Amargo Trueborn, to win the title from an outsider in the evil. No, she's not evil.
She's not company, evil.
Sarai. So I that's just my prediction. So I'll probably be wrong, but you know.
I mean, I would co-sign on that, especially when, for those who haven't seen the show from the 28th of August, that was kind of like Julia's graduation at the very end, where they each had like a minute to wrestle her and see if they could pin her or not. But part of her promo at the very end was that she said to Utami, "It's up to you now," and basically just smacked Utami across the face. And Utami, you know, Utami's trying not to cry. But because one of the biggest things was that she and Julia never, I don't think they had a singles match in the lead up to Julia's leaving. I could be wrong. I haven't been able to keep up with everything because of our G1 coverage, but I don't believe that Julia and Utami had a singles match since Marigold. I'm going to check this real quick, because this is going to bother me. But it was also the Julia was able to mend a fence to a certain extent because in her graduation 60-second matches with everyone, the very last person to come out was Ice Ribbon's Tsukasa Fujimoto. And it was, if you want to know what, like, it gave me the same feeling it did when she wrestled Suzu for the first time. It was, of course, condensed to a minute, but it was still very emotional. And Fujimoto came in, they had a great bit, but she didn't sugarcoat it. She didn't like hug Julie and tell her she did a great job afterwards. She just told her, do what you have to, and just left afterwards.
For those of you who don't know, like, while Karen's looking this up, like, Julia left Ice Ribbon, very controversial circumstances, burned a lot of bridges, especially at the time, Suzuki, that's a shoot, because they were roommates, and, like, yeah. She didn't know, and then, like, Suzu got a lot of fucking heat from the company, from Ice Ribbon, according to her, and then, like, the big star, and one of the top people, management is Tsukasa Fujimoto, and like she was really fucking blindsided by her leaving to go to Stardom at the time, and you know, via, you know, recruitment by Rossi Ogawa. But so it's nice. I think it's nice that, you know, Julia, you know, put this kind of like closure on this part of her Japanese career while she goes to, of course, WWE, because she did show up on NXT television to challenge
twice in the same week.
Right. Is it Roxanne?
Yes. Roxanne Perez is the current champion. Yeah. And it's, I didn't watch it, but from what I can tell, it's going to be for the title, because why would she just not jump the queue because she can, but it's going to be when NXT debuts on the CW network on October 1st.
So you can tell WWE has very high hopes in Julia. So, but you know, if Utami did Utami and Julia have a match before she left?
She only had that 1 minute during the graduation send off. They have not had a proper singles match.
Well, you know, Utami.
I mean, now that Mary Gold's announced that they're planning on having a show WrestleMania week. If Io can come by for a show, it is possible that they could easily make NXT Julia versus Utami be a thing.
That's right. I mean, that's the whole thing, right? Like, she got her match against Io. Utami did, right? So, like, I think it's very likely Julia's showing up in Marigold after, like, even as, like, maybe a WWE champion in whatever brand it might be.
I feel like it'll be, If the you know, all the speculation is to believe, I think the match with Io wasn't a one-off, that it could be the beginning of something. Just like, you know, sending NXT to participate in Noah's N1 or in All Japan. I would like to see it be something more than just a one-off, personally. But that's just personal preference, I guess.
So kind of to close out our Joshi segment of this show, I want to announce that something I'm really excited to watch when eventually makes tape, as it were, as we used to say back in the tape trading days, Karen, Sendai Girls will have a show on September 13th at the Sendai Pit in Miyagi.
We do love the Sendai Pit.
And on that show, the main event will be for the Sendai Girls World Championship. 14th champion, sorry, Anno, defends her title against the person she beat for that belt, Mika Iwata. And I bring this up because I think that's going to be an awesome match. But two, last show, I talked about how much I loved Sari Anno's story. And this includes, obviously, her storyline with Natsupoi and for the Wonder of Stardom title, but also her story with Mika Iwata, and produced some really great matches for that Sendai Girls World Championship. So something to go, if you like wrestling, go out of your watch. Sariano versus Mika Iwata is always fucking gold.
Sendai Girls does put a lot of matches on their YouTube channel, like full matches for free 99 on their YouTube channel. But also, Sendai Girls is on Wrestle Universe. So those who have the Wrestle Universe platform, you can search up all the wonderful, wonderful Mika Iwata goodness. She is probably hands down my favorite person in Sendai Girls, with a very close second is Dash Chisako. But yes, I'm still waiting for Iwata versus Shuri. I need that match to happen.
I think it'll happen
somewhere,
somehow. The thing is, you know what I was remiss in saying during our G1 coverage? I think New Japan World has gotten so much better with chapters and the way you can go through, like, in a match.
That, yes, but what for me as a someone who tries to rise early to watch but never can get up at the actual start time, you can't scrub to the beginning of the live stream anymore, and that was always a way that I liked to do it to avoid spoilers.
Sure.
So now it's like I have to make sure that, like, now I have to wait for the archive to fully go up before I can do anything.
As someone who didn't even bother and just waited for the archive, I think it's so much better.
Do you watch it on a Windows computer or on a Mac?
I'm a Windows person. I've never been a Mac person.
That is also why, as a Mac user, it is absolutely abysmal. I hate it so much.
You should come over to my side of the street there, then, Karen. You know what I'm saying?
We just hop a plane to go to a watch party in Toronto.
No, go to Windows.
Need another computer.
Anyways, let's move on. Pro Wrestling Noah. Some notes from here. Top story, I think, is very low key. Wrestling legend, All Japan, Noah legend, Yoshinori Kawa, someone who's won pretty much every fucking title in this company. He was a junior heavyweight champion, junior tag champion multiple times. Famously with Zack Sabre Jr., as Zack put him over big time when he won the G1 Climax. Former GHC heavyweight champion, former GHC tag champions with being the regular tag partner before his untimely passing, Mitsuhara Misawa. He's been wrestling since 1985, Karen.
Oh my gosh.
That's when he debuted.
Wow.
And he was part of All Japan Pro Wrestling. He's originally part of, Tenryu's group, Revolution. Then he joined the Holy Demon Army, and then he eventually became partners. And probably the biggest boost to his career was being tag team partners with Misawa. I'm gonna do a long and winding road with Dylan Fox over from the Eastern Laird. We're gonna discuss his favorite Ogawa match, which will be a Noah tag match. It will be Misawa and Ogawa versus. Are you ready, Karen? It's Misawa and Ogawa versus Kenta and Naomichi Marufuji. We're gonna discuss that match, and we're gonna as kind of a frame.
I may need to see the tape for that match.
I'll hook you up. And we're gonna frame it around. That's gonna be our framework to talk about Ogawa and his career, because Dylan's a big fan, and as I am. As well of Yoshinori Kawa. So he's been dealing with a lot of nagging injuries over the last several years, particularly with his neck. So he just said, I'm retiring. I'm done. You know, like, Tanahashi, please take note. And he didn't want press conference. He didn't want a retirement ceremony, final match. He just had his last match and he said, that's it. I'm done. And there you go. And, but you know, there's tons of his matches up there. You should watch them. They're good. When he's a junior heavyweight, tag wrestler with Misawa, tag wrestler with Zack and Noah, singles wrestler, one of the best technical wrestlers you will ever find. I say this, I think he was the Bret Hart of Japan for his time, in terms of, like, just being an excellent technical wrestler, professional, not probably one of the easiest workers to work with, but made everything look realistic and just a pioneer in, like, really great technical wrestling and junior heavyweight style. There you go. Let's talk about the N1, Karen. It wrapped up on September 1st at the Edeon Arena in Osaka. In the finals, I really liked this stipulation. I watched this match. I thought it was really good. It was Kaito Kimiya, the current and defending GHC heavyweight champion, because also in the N1 final, he defended his title against his current unit stablemate, Kenno. Kenno said, okay, you and I in the finals, I want that belt. I'm going to beat you to be the N1 champion. And I also want to become the champion while I'm at it. Forget, like, winning it and then challenging later. I want
Work
that belt.
Smarter, not
and,
harder.
And Kaito Kimiya said, yes, I'm going to defend this fucking belt. and I'm going to win the N1. I'm going to be retained. And that's what happened. Kaito Kiyomiya defeated Kenno in 25 minutes, 9 seconds in a great match using the arm drag hold, as taught to him many, many times, as he said in post-match from Yoshinari Ogawa. This is his third successful title defense, and this is his second time in a row winning the N1 victory. So really, honestly, like, I think the rehabilitation of Kaito Kiyomiya is doing very well. I think it's a little rocky, especially getting laid out by Gabe, you know, to set up their match. But this is what you have to be doing with Kiyomiya, and it's a good start. Correct. Please keep the belt on him for a little while. I don't think it needs to be taken off of him. I think the rehabilitation continues. Have you seen this match yet?
I have not. It is earmarked for the weekend.
Upcoming on September 14th, Karen, at Corican Hall, there's the Star Navigation 2024 tour is happening and stopping Corican Hall. There's two matches announced there. GHC National Championship match, the 11th champion, Uka Sasaki, will take on challenger, the buff Manabu Soya. I hope Soya wins the belt. I really like Soya, right? And recently he's really on a tear. He looks amazing. And he's been killing it. He's been killing a lot of his matches. But also I think maybe a little bit more interest is that Ryohei Oiwa from New Japan Pro Wrestling on excursion, not in Mexico, not in Germany, not in America, but in the Pro Wrestling NOAH, is ending his excursion in NOAH, and he'll be returning very soon back to New Japan Pro Wrestling. He's going to have his last NOAH match against the person he would team up with a lot in the G1 last year and in NOAH until he turned on him. And that is, of course, GHC Championship champion Kaito Kiyomiya. They'll be having their last match for the foreseeable future on this show at Corican Hall. What do you think about that? This turn of events?
I think it's a good send off. I'm wondering if they're recalling him back early because of Uemura's arm injury, which is going to keep him out for about 6 months, which was finally announced earlier this week on New Japan's website that they officially had a diagnosis for him and a projected return table. That's probably going to be end of February 2025. So given that he's had a good run in NOAH, maybe they're going to try to capitalize on that. But I don't know if they're going to strap the rocket to him as soon as he gets back or if they're going to kind of slot him into where Uemura would have been.
I'm thinking the latter. I personally don't think he's been being brought back too soon, but I think it's something they probably thought about. Like, oh, now it's probably the time anyways. Let's bring him back. We got Umers out. I don't know if they're going to strap the rocket to him, but what I do think is that he's going to surpass Shota Umino and Ren Narita. He's going to be pushed harder than either of those two because if you watch his stuff in NOAH, he's been killing it. He's been fucking, like, that was the best thing for him was to go to excursion over at the rival company, learn from some of the best wrestlers in Japan and the world working over there. And then now he's going to bring all that experience over to New Japan. And like he sees it, like he's been doing excursion in Japan. So a lot of New Japan fans have probably been watching him, like either live or on streaming somehow. And they're probably like, fuck yeah, we're excited for him to come back. He'll probably get new gear, new look, hopefully new haircut. I don't like his current haircut. It doesn't make too many favors, but you know, get a cosmetic makeover. And I'm telling you, Karen, he's going to challenge for that belt sometime in the next year, you know, and I don't know when he's going to get the belt, but he's totally going to smoke fucking Shota Umino. Shota Umino is going to be eating his dust booking wise. Same thing with Ren Narita. Ren Narita is fucked in this current gimmick he's in with the House of Torture.
I know.
But it's okay. I'm telling you, Karen, Ryohei Oiwa is our new fucking savior.
He's our new guy.
Tsuji, Uemura, and Oiwa are new fuck.
Oh, spicy. Are you going to call them the true three musketeers?
I hate that label, but like, if you're going to do anything, it's also, fuck, nice shot fucking Shota. he's fucking lost the plot. And Renry, they fucked this guy. I feel sorry for him more than anything else. But hey, you got three guys. Who am I missing out again? That you just say I forgot somebody? Being
no.
pushed? Those three, I think.
Yeah.
Are,
because the other guys that are on excursion are in the UK right now, like Oscar Loiba and
the Japanese Afro.
Mm-hmm. That
yeah.
one.
Yeah. The Young Blood. That's what they're called. The Young Blood.
Young Blood.
I think they're going to come back as a tag team, obviously. And, you know, I want to see who Oleg's going to be teamed up with. You know what? Fucking put him with fucking Oiwa here. Oleg and Oiwa. What a fuck. The O&O Express. There you go.
Express. But the rest of the card for that show, for the Noah show, is available. It's just a bunch of tag matches. There's no other title matches announced yet. But there is a debut match for a new young man.
A sailor, because, you know, they got the nautical theme. The young sailors of Noah.
A little baby bird.
There you go. Let's move on. Karen, All Japan Pro Wrestling. Some really cool developments recently. I got to watch from August 17th at the arena, Tachikawa, Taichihi, Yuma Aoyagi, unseated the Triple Crown.
Ooh.
From Yuma Anzai, who I've been so high on during his title run with the TC belt. He defeated, Yuma defeated Yuma to win the Triple Crown in a very good match. You know, and no worries about Anzai. He's fucking said he had six very good title defenses before losing to his senpai, to Senpai Yuma. We'll call him Senpai Yuma, you know, to Kohai Yuma here. But, yeah, he's going to get that belt back. He's going to have long reigns. He's going to be okay. He's basically the next gen fucking Kento Miyahara for the next 10 years in this company, and I'm all here for it. And then, yeah, I'm glad it's kind of an interesting continuity with the Triple Crown, Karen, because, like, you know, Anzai won it from Nakajima, who beat Aoyagi for the belt. And I kind of think, like, if Nakajima didn't show up in All Japan and pulled, you know, political weight, he would have probably never, like, Yuma would have kept this belt for longer. And I do think, like, they were always going to put the belt early on Anzai because he always showed that potential to be like, shit, let's just draft the rocket to this guy, see where he goes. And he fucking knocked out of the park. So, there you go. But, then Yuma defended his Triple Crown successfully against his perennial rival and tag team partner, both at the same time, Kento Miyahara, on September 1st at the Fukuoka Island City Forum venue. So I've not watched that one yet, but Yuma versus Yuma, very good match, very fun match. I do urge people, if you can somehow watch it. I watched it on AJPW.TV because I keep my membership to that thing. Even though I let other things lapse, I keep my membership to that thing. But with going out of your way to see. Also, you know, we talked about the Dream Star League for Mari Gold, Karen. Well, guess what? All Japan will be having their annual fall tournament, their version of the New Japan Cup, essentially the Odo tournament. It's a single elimination tournament to determine a challenger for the Triple Crown. Originally, Suwama was a participant, but he will not be able to be in the tournament because of ongoing health issues, especially with he's suffering from vertigo, unfortunately.
Oh,
which
yeah,
sounds
no.
like not fun. From the indies, Yuko Miyamoto will take his place in the Odo tournament. So I'm just going to run down all the first round matches and then we'll move on. So September 14th at Nagoya Kokusai, Kaijijo in Aichi Prefecture, Yuma Aoyagi will take on Ryuki Honda. Shotaro Ashino will take on Dan Tamura, and Yuko Miyamoto, replacing Suwama, will take on the returning Joel Redman from the UK. On September 15th at Axe City Hamamatsu in Shizuoka Prefecture, Kento Miyahara will take on Hideki Suzuki, and June Saito versus Cyrus. So that is essentially a one match card that you can pretty much just not have to bother going to live. I wouldn't, if I was still in Numazu, Karen, it's like a 90-minute Shinkansen ride to get the fucking Hamamatsu.
Is it like literally on the opposite side of the prefecture?
Yes, it's Tokyo is fucking closer.
Oh, wow.
Than fucking Hamamatsu. But Hamamatsu is a great town. I really like Hamamatsu, but I wouldn't go to this to just to see that one match. But on September 16th at Osaka Hana, Hakukinen Koen Tsurumi Ryokuchi Hanamizuki Hall. Holy fuck, what a long
You made
name.
It. You made it.
we'll have Yuma Anzai taking on his stablemate Ren Ayabe. That should be good. Dave Boy Smith Jr. will take on Hokuto Omori. That's not going to be a good match. And Rei Saito, one of those big Saito brothers, will take on Kuma Rashi. That should be fun. So I'm going to say Shotaro Shino. I'm always saying Shotaro Shino is going to win a tournament because I love Shotaro Shino. But I think Shotaro Shino should win the New Japan Cup and challenge Yuma Ayagi for that belt. But we'll see what happens. Any thoughts about this, Karen?
I mean, I'm excited to see Yuko Miyamoto in this. It could be his year. I don't know. Because, you know, Suwama tends to win tournaments when he's in his when he's in fighting shape. So, I mean, it'll be great. I hope I have time to watch it because it's one of those tournaments I've always wanted to watch, but I never have. To be very Jesse Spano about it, there's never enough time.
Karen, just skip 9:15, okay? You don't have to watch the 15th.
You got okay. it.
You can just watch, really, 9:14 and 9:16. I don't think the 9:16 matches are going to be that long. I think they're all going to be like under 20 minutes. That's my guess. That's my hope. But anyways, let's finish things off, Karen. I have not watched this show yet, but I'm going to be getting it, and so will you, obviously. But we're just going to run down the results of Takayama Empire 3 that happened on September 3rd at Korakuen Hall with 1,700 spectators in attendance. Also, Takayama Empire's 4 to benefit the medical costs of one Yoshihiro Takayama, Japanese MMA and professional wrestling legend who has been paralyzed since having a terrible accident in ring. So special guests on this show, Karen, were Kenny Kobashi, Kazuo Yamazaki, Sanshiro Takagi, and Keiji Muto. In the first match, it was Hard Hit versus Hardcore, Hikaru Sato and Takayuki Ueki versus Hideki Suzuki and Jun Kasai. Hideki won following a double arm suplex hold on Ueki. Your favorite, Meiko Satomura, took on Shin Sakura Hirota, aka Shin Yoshihiro Takayama, doing a Takayama cosplay. Meiko won following the Scorpion Rising. Team 300 kilogram showdown, Masao Inoue, Chihiro Hashimoto, and you took on Jun. This is a hell of a team. Jun Akiyama, Shuji Ishikawa, and Hiroyu Matsumoto. Akiyama won with the roll up on Masao Inoue, who he always liked to like kind of bully in the ring because they were both part of All Japan and Noah together. Naomichi Marufuji teaming up with Dashinoku Dino from DDT, taking on better comedy wrestler Kikutaro and Ryota Hama. Marufuji won with a lip lock on Kikutaro. Yeah, your eyebrows popped up there.
Hey, that wasn't the submission hold I was expecting out of one Naomichi Marufuji.
He's a very he's an innovator of moves. Many people have stolen his moves.
He loves the wrestling. He does it for the wrestling.
Many famous people, big stars, have stolen his moves.
I know.
And in our main event, which is probably the only match I will actually watch once I acquire this show, is Minoru Suzuki took on, returning to Japan for the first time since his match against Kazuchika Okada that almost killed him, literally, Katsuyori Shibata. Shibata won with a PK kick, and it's a near 30-minute match, Karen, but I'm not complaining. 30 minutes of Minoru Suzuki wrestling Shibata should be good. Should be good. Okay, so some notes. Suzuki and Shibata paid each other their respective respects to one another. We saw at the ending of the show, my God, Yoshihiro Takayama came to the ring in his wheelchair. And, you know, Suzuki really called for, try to channel fighting spirit into him and asked him, you know, implored him to come to the ring, to come into the ring, stand up and kick him in the face. But that wasn't going to happen, as much as that would have been awesome to see. But Minoru Suzuki, you know, showed his respect to Takayama and told him to never give up in his struggle to fully recover as much as possible from his injury. And Keiji Muto stated that if Yoshihiro Takayama, you know, is ever able to come return to the ring, he'll come out of retirement to stand by his side. So we don't have to see that, Muto-san. You can just stay in retirement and support Takayama that way.
Yeah, don't make this potential miracle about you. Yes. Let it be about Takayama.
Please. All right. And with that, we're going to wrap it up on this edition of Post Press. Karen, we're coming in at, like, you know, 90 minutes. Fucking awesome.
This is a rare instance in the post pro res, but I think it's just we kind of plowed through everything.
We manifested it. We said it.
I'm yes. proud of us.
I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you. and I expect my freshly knit socks to be coming in the mail soon.
Hey, you never know.
You never know. But where can people find more of your work, Karen?
Well, you can find most of my work over at postwrestling.com. There will be a double shot this month of Dream Slam Monthly. The August wrap-up will come out this coming Saturday, and then at the end of the month, the September wrap-up will take place. I will be doing the New Japan coverage of Destruction in Kobe at the end of the month with Bruce Lord, I believe. And of course, you know, you can find me over on Twitter and the YouTube and Instagram at Hey Karen Sensei. And of course, if you want to support my endeavors, if you go to chopped-tees.com/Karen-Peterson, the Empress Collection is still available. The weather is starting to drop. Autumn pumpkin spice season is here. There are a variety of hoodies in very autumn friendly colors available.
Yeah, the white one looks really nice, I think.
Yes. I needed something that wasn't just navy blue. I love navy blue. It's one of my favorite colors, but I wanted something that doesn't absorb all of the Florida sun. So there are white options available for the hoodies.
So also, if you want to support Karen and myself, as you know, please buy some Empress merchandise, of course, but also, hey, you know, if you can spare some money after a little bit of change after that, you can go to Chopped Tees's site and find some post-Perez merchandise, some long and winding railroad merchandise, and of course some MCU later merchandise. And of course, long and winding railroad will make its return in October with Dylan Fox as we talk about Yoshinari Ogawa. And Post Perez will return about a month's time. Karen and myself will come back. And then, and, you know, if you want to come to those are all freeloader shows, you know, like this is a freeloader show.
For the freeloaders.
Right. But I love the freeloaders, you know, because you're going to go over to Chopped Tees and buy some fucking merchandise, right? But hey, if you want to hear my takes on the Marvel Cinematic Universe, you have to fucking pay up. You have to pony up and go to the Post Wrestling Cafe, patreon.com/postwrestling. And then you can sign, if you become a Patreon for as little as like, what, I think $6 a month? What the fuck? You get talk, Karen. Not just MCU later. You get MCU later. Me fucking talking about MCU with my good buddy, Rich Fan. Some and variety of guests, including yourself. You're going to be on Agatha All Along, right?
Oh, am I? Am I? Sure.
You're going to watch it, right?
Yeah, sure. Just tell me when.
We'll let you know. It's starting soon.
But, yeah, I saw that.
We are in the midst. We're wrapping up a special programming on MCU later. MCU Hater, where we take a look at some of the worst reviewed MCU films or MCU adjacent films. We've been looking at three X-Men films that we didn't review on our lead up to Deadpool Wolverine, which would have been X-Men Apocalypse, X-Men Dark Phoenix, the movie we just reviewed this past week, X-Men New Mutants, and we're delving out of the X-Men universe into the Spider-Man universe as myself, Rich Fan, and Wei Ting. That's right, fucking Wei Ting is making his fucking return to MCU later after like a 3-week hiatus after reviewing Deadpool 2 with us. several weeks ago, but he's coming back to review. Good Lord, I don't know how I got talked into this. Madam Web, Jesus fuck,
I have heard the worst things about that. I'm sorry.
Me too. But get, you know, if you miss out on that, it's always in the archives, folks. But come on, just pony up. Come on, next week, me, Rich, and Wei, we're gonna talk about fucking Madam Web. But guess what? You know what, Karen, MCUA hater isn't going to be done. At some point, me and Rich are going to watch all the Venom movies to lead up to the release of the new Venom movie. I fucking hate Venom as a character in general, so I'm not looking forward to that, but I am looking forward to that.
If you need someone to hate on those, I'm down.
you know what you can hate on with us, Karen? We're probably going to at some point review Morbius, and that has your favorite Time Lord, Matt Smith, and your favorite Targaryen. Demon Heart Targaryen.
I can fix him, yes. I swear.
so maybe we'll get you. Maybe we're going to pencil you in. I'll just tell Rich later. Karen's going to be on the Morbius review whenever the fuck we do that.
Sure, why not?
You get to see Matt Smith dancing around. Morbin time.
I do love a dancing Matt Smith.
There you go. All right. So in the meantime, thanks everyone. Thanks all the freeloaders. I do appreciate you. I truly do. Not if you're listening to MCU later, because you should pay for that. But on this programming, Long One Railroad, I appreciate everyone who listens. Thank you. Hey, support us. Go to Chopped Tees. Karen, myself, both have stores there. Send feedback. I don't know. Tell people. Tell a friend. Tell them to listen. We like the downloads. We like the views on the YouTube. But speaking for Karen, until next time, thank you everyone for listening. And until next time, we'll say goodbye.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, oh.